Welcome back to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast, episode 74. Lately, I have been doing one podcast episode a week. I was strong on two a week for a while, and then I went to launch my course. So I relaunched my blog course that I put out 2 years ago, and it just was a lot of work. So it was a strong push, and then we had my sister's wedding, so I know I'm making excuses here, but I do eventually hope to get back to two episodes a week, but lately it's just been next to impossible to get that out with all of the other things in my life that are going on. So let's talk about that. Now, I have still been posting two YouTube videos and two blog posts every single week. So if you only know me here from the podcast, I do have a blog, farmhouseonboone.com, and then also a YouTube channel, youtube.com/farmhouseonboone. So there is a lot more coming out of this farmhouse than just this podcast that you can check out. I also was recently on the Homemaker Chic podcast. I know that just probably like, two or three weeks ago on my Ask Anything episode, I mentioned that that was one of my favorite podcasts, and then they actually reached out and invited me on it, and then I was on it within the week. So that was exciting. So if you want to listen to that episode, it's the Homemaker Chic podcast. You can find it on all of the places. I listen on Apple Podcasts. So life's been busy. That sounds like a whole bunch of excuses, but it really is true. We homeschool 6 kids. We blog full time. We make YouTube videos full time. And from an outside perspective, it looks pretty easy. But you know, if you're a blogger or a YouTuber or content creator of any kind, that there's a lot more that goes into all of that than what it appears on the surface. So with that being said, I really, truly love doing this podcast. I've had at least two or three different people reach out to me and basically tell me that they love the podcast and they don't want me to ever stop doing it because they feel like I might. And you're right, I have definitely been feeling less than enthusiastic, which is why I've cut down to one episode per week, but I don't have any intentions to stop. I just, when in seasons like this, where the motivation for something like that is running a little bit low, I really appreciate your encouragement. So for those of you who reached out, thank you. But I don't plan to completely stop it. I actually just booked several more guests today. I reached out to several more people. And so those will be upcoming. Let me know if there's anybody that you think I should bring on this podcast. Send me a DM on Instagram. That's how the Homemaker Chic girls, Angela and Shay, decided to have me on theirs, is they had several people tell them that they should. So let me know who you want on this one and who you want to hear me have a discussion with. I'm totally open to suggestions, and it actually just makes my job easier whenever you help think of guests for me. So if you got one, let me know.
My name is Lisa, mom of 6 and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch cooking and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way.
So the first thing I want to talk about today is Thanksgiving upcoming. I just pulled all of my Thanksgiving recipes from the blog up to the front, and I've just been staring at them, and I finally today ordered on Instacart my groceries. I ordered all of the things to make my healthy Thanksgiving meals. And I actually decided to have some friends over in my barn we have so much to catch up on here. I'm just realizing that when I last talked to you, we hadn't yet had the wedding here. So we had my sister's wedding in our barn, which there's a YouTube video coming for that very soon. But that involved clearing everything out of the barn, adding new loads of gravel, stringing the string lights, adding mums and pumpkins. The barn looks beautiful right now. And I didn't want to waste the opportunity. I mean, of course it wasn't wasted because there was a wedding there, but it's still pretty. And so I reached out to some of my close friends around here and I was like, hey guys, anybody up for a dinner in the barn this weekend, because I don't want to waste the fact that the barn looks amazing and pretty soon all of our stuff, like our tools and feed, is all going to trickle back in, and the animals of course are going to get it gross again because we've moved them back in there. So I invited them over, and then today I was thinking through what I'm actually going to make for them, and I saw on Instacart that they have cranberries now, because as you know, cranberries are really seasonal. You can't get them year round, but they're amazing. Whenever it's cranberry season, my sister and I both buy at the end of the cranberry season 30 bags and freeze them. Actually, she normally does that. I don't buy quite that many, but she buys them in bulk, puts them in her freezer, and makes kefir cranberry smoothies all throughout the winter. Anyways, they're in. And so I just texted my friends and told them that we're going to be having Thanksgiving fare this Friday. I am making sweet potato casserole with pecans. That's a recipe from the blog. I have a whole series of Thanksgiving recipes on my blog that are healthy versions of original classics. I got on this kick last year. I tested tons of things and came up with a bunch. So I have the sourdough stuffing, cranberries that are only sweetened with natural things like orange juice and honey, and I believe that one has some apple cider in it. A classic green bean casserole from scratch, so I actually top it with onions that I slice and fry in einkorn. Super good. And then sourdough dinner rolls. I ordered a turkey. So Thanksgiving is on the horizon. And even though it's just the beginning of November, I like to make the classic Thanksgiving meal several times all throughout this season. It's just so good and you don't get to eat it any other time. And so I try to make it at least 5 to 10 times throughout the year. And it's great because you can make a whole bunch of it and then just pull it out all throughout the week and eat Thanksgiving. So good. I actually made an ebook with all of these recipes collected together so that you can print it off and have it available all throughout the season. So you can get my Thanksgiving from scratch free ebook, Simple Recipes for a Wholesome Holiday, at bit.ly/Thanksgiving from scratch. So bit.ly/Thanksgiving from scratch, all one word. And then you can get some of my recipes for a healthy Thanksgiving season. I'm really excited to make them. I'm gonna have to have Luke help me bring some kind of table out to the barn. I didn't really think that through, but I don't have a table in the barn currently to host my friends. But I don't know. I have been, ever since I saw my barn, I've been dreaming about having some kind of farm dinner party type of thing. I'm picturing lots of candles on a rustic table and pumpkins. And so now that my barn is all ready for it, I just decided I have to make it happen and stop dreaming about this plan that's never actually going to go anywhere. So that is on the agenda, and I just wanted to discuss that with you and talk about Thanksgiving, because that's happy times. And I don't know about you, but right now I'm trying to not think about all that is going on in our country, and thinking about Thanksgiving and Christmas is exciting. So on to other things. One more little quick thing I want to talk about before I jump into the rest of this podcast episode, which I'm going to make this a Ask Me Anything part two. I have several more questions that you all had for me that I'm going to answer. But before I dive into that, I did not tell you all that we bought a Jersey cow. So you know that we bought a little heifer, a little Guernsey heifer, several months ago. My friend picked her up for me at a farm over in Illinois. She is about 8 months old, so I can't really breed her until next summer, possibly fall, so that she calves around the time that she's two. And that sounded like a really good plan until I really got tired of only getting a quart of milk per day from my two goats. So I'm still milking my two goats every single morning, but I only get about a pint per goat, and then I end up with a quart, which, as you can imagine, does not do it for my six kids. So I didn't want to wait any longer to milk our cow. And that's what you're going to have to do when you buy a calf that's a heifer. So I found online, actually, Luke and I were on our date night. Both times, my friends texted me, first the first friend about the Guernsey heifer, and the second time and a different friend about the four-year-old Jersey, was when I was on a date night with my husband. So apparently, if you text me something that I should buy when I'm with my husband on a date night and I'm feeling just positive about life and not overwhelmed, I always agree to it. So I right away messaged the lady and we made plans to go. We had to drive 4 hours to get this cow. So we went yesterday, actually, as I'm recording this, and we picked her up. She does not love me yet. I think, you know, just being transferred from a place that she's familiar with and driven 4 hours in the back of a trailer. When I went to get her off, Luke got some video footage of her knocking me to the ground. I did not choose to share that on Instagram or YouTube or any place, but she did make it into the pen. She's in there, and now I am just working every day on getting her to like me before she has her calf this spring. So she is bred. She will have a female calf. If you're not a farm girl, the way that works is the person that had her artificially inseminated or AI'd used sexed semen so that she will have a female calf who will also be a dairy calf. So if I want to sell her or put her out at my sister's farm because she is starting a little dairy operation there, that option is there because she will be a female. So that's exciting. I have a beautiful Jersey. She is so cute. We don't have a name for her yet, but Jerseys, if you're not familiar with cow breeds, they have these big eyes and these ears that flop out to the side, and then it looks like they're wearing eyeliner around their eyes. It just looks so pretty. And this one's exceptionally pretty. Of course, I'm saying that because she's the cow that we just drove 4 hours one way with kids to get. But we're excited to get to know her. I'll share more later. I haven't decided how quickly I'm gonna share about this on YouTube because we actually brought our little heifer out to my sister's farm. And I don't know, it seems like sometimes people on, not all people on YouTube, but you get the people who don't understand how farms work, who think of animals as people, and I don't know if I'm ready for that. So my Guernsey heifer, we did not get rid of her. We are keeping her, but we brought her to my sister's farm so that whenever she is old enough to breed so that we can get milk from her, she will be put out with my sister's bulls, and then she will give birth to a Jersey Angus cross, which is really good for meat, which will be the plan with that. So then I have a plan of always, and this could be, I could be thinking about this wrong because I'm new to dairy as well. I grew up on a farm, but I didn't grow up on a small hobby farm dairy type of situation. But my plan is that I'll always have one cow in milk, and they'll take turns on breeding and being milked. So we'll probably eventually, my Jersey, once she's in the position of needing to be bred again, I will likely bring her out to my sister's farm for that again. So it's really nice having so many farmers in your life whenever you're doing something like this. I also, one of my good friends just down the street has a Jersey bull. So if I want a full bred Jersey, I have that option as well. So it is really great. And also I was asked recently on Instagram, with homesteading, what will you do if you want to travel? And of course it will take more effort, but I do have people in my life who could help. So my friend down the street, I told her, if you want to go on vacation, I'll come milk your goats and your cows, and then we can always return the favor. Plus, my sister who's a farmer, we could always take all the animals to her house, even though it's an hour away. But anytime you go on vacation, it's going to take a lot of special prep. So especially with six kids. So I feel like we already weren't super mobile. Definitely less mobile now, but still totally possible. All right, for the rest of this podcast episode, I was planning to take a few more of your questions that you asked on Instagram. So the first one I'm taking is, how did you choose your kids' names? So our first daughter is named Ruth Annabelle. When we were getting married, our pastor did some premarital counseling with us on a book that was based on the book of Ruth, and we decided that we would name our first daughter Ruth. We did not realize that we were literally going to be due on our first anniversary. So we were married December 15th, and then our first child was due exactly a year later on December 15th. She wasn't born on her due date, so she wasn't actually born on the anniversary, but we kept with that original plan and we named her Ruth. Her middle name is Annabelle. It's after my grandma, Anne, and Luke's grandma, Clarabelle, so we combined the two for that. Our next daughter, Johanna, I just chose a name that I liked. I liked the name Johanna. I thought it sounded really beautiful. And then her middle name is after her great-grandma, Luke's grandma, and it is Faye. Our third is named Eli Lucas. His middle name is after his dad, my husband, Luke. And then his first name I just chose because I liked it yet again. We really like classic names. Our fourth is named Jude Matthew. His middle name is after his grandpa, my husband's dad. And his first name, again, we just liked it. Same with Micah. We just liked the name. Now, his middle name is very unique. Luke came up with this idea. He wanted to name his middle name after his grandpa. He actually wanted to name his first name after his grandpa, but I didn't like it that much. But he is named Micah Bobby Jean. So Luke's grandpa is named Bobby Jean. And so his middle name is two names. And then we decided to do the exact same thing with Daniel. So Daniel is Luke's other grandpa, Teddy Paul. They're both Southern men, as you can tell. They have those Southern names. Their names are not Theodore. They are not Robert. It's Bobby and Teddy. So Teddy Paul, Bobby Jean. So Daniel Teddy Paul, Micah Bobby Jean. Again, with Daniel, he is named after we were studying the book of Daniel in our Sunday school whenever we named him. So Luke came up with that idea, and then his middle name after Luke's grandpa. Now, what's really kind of cool, of course, we didn't plan this, but Micah looks like the grandpa that he's named after, and Daniel looks like the side of the family that he's named after. It was not something that we could tell when they were first born, but then now that Daniel's one and Micah's three, it's become apparent who they favor, and it's just weird that it worked out that way. Also, Micah, the one he's named after, ended up passing away around a year and a half after Micah was born. So it was really neat that he got to know him for a year and a half, or that Luke's grandpa was able to meet this child that he was named after for a year and a half. All the names, mostly except for Ruth, are just names that we liked, and then we went with family names for middle names. You and your husband's love story. Now, first things first, I am a very non-emotional type person, if you haven't caught that. I think it's a stereotypical German thing to be unable to express your feelings very well. So even saying the words our love story is slightly awkward for me. However, we do love each other, and we have been together now for 15 years, actually almost to the day, 15 years. And so I guess we have a love story. And I would say, if you are listening to this and you are a young married woman, that you will love your spouse more the longer you're married. At least that has been my experience. As we've built our life together, we've had so many experiences. We've raised children. I mean, obviously none of them are old enough to be considered raised. So many things that when we were first married would have been little arguments, or just things that I would have not, when I didn't know him as well, be able to understand where he was coming from. All of those have developed over time to where I completely understand where he's coming from. We can both let certain things about each other almost become funny that would have bothered us years ago. And so we spend so much time together that we really get the opportunity to figure out how to work things out and have a strong relationship. But to answer your question, we met in October of 2005. That's crazy. I kind of forgot that, and until I'm saying this, forgot that we just have been together 15 years now. We randomly met at a friend's house. We were both non-Christians at this time, so this was a party. He came with his roommate, who was dating my sister at the time. When we got to the place that we were all going together, every single person had a boyfriend or girlfriend, and they all paired up, and I looked over and realized that there was one person left, and I didn't have a boyfriend at the time, and after everyone had paired up, there was one guy left, and that was Luke. I right away liked him, so later I made my sister give her boyfriend at the time my phone number. I just totally pursued that, and we ended up finding out that we had a ton in common. We enjoyed doing the same things. Luke and I are very, very different from one another, but there are so many things about his personality that my personality lacks that I appreciate so much, and I've come to appreciate it even more over the years. If you want a little bit more info, or if you want to hear this relationship in action, you can listen to episode 34 of this podcast. Luke and I did our first Q&A, and I don't know if it's probably our last. He is not one to love to talk to a camera or, you know, be on my videos. He's on my videos in passing, but he hardly ever talks on them. So that was a unique opportunity. I think there you will sense a little bit more of what he's like. He's very funny. He's very, very smart. And truly, I grow to appreciate him more with every single year. So there is our, I guess you could call it our non-sappy love story. We were married about 2 years after we met. So we met in October of 2005 and we married in December of 2007. We became Christians not too long before that and decided that we should make it official and be married. So that's what we did. How do you manage to do chores around the house? What's your routine? We don't really have a set routine. We just try to constantly stay on it, and it's a team effort. When I first was married, I had a thing where I was like, okay, I'll do the floors on Monday and laundry on Tuesday. I don't do that so much anymore. I just, when I have spare time, or anybody in this family, the kids, Luke, we all do it. It's all hands on deck for it. And it really doesn't feel that overwhelming anymore. But when we see a job that needs to be done, someone picks it up and does it. And there's not really a routine to it so much as just staying on top of things. Tell us about your childhood and relationship with your siblings. I grew up on an elk farm. We had cattle, elk, cats, dogs. Elk is not a common farm animal, but my dad got the idea that he wanted to raise North American Rocky Mountain elk, and that's what he did. We always had people drive by our house really slow and try to figure out what was behind the 8-foot tall fence. My grandpa also owned a racetrack with race cars. And so I grew up on an elk farm and a racetrack on 400 acres. It was really a dream childhood, if you think about it. I mean, we had just space to run everywhere. It was amazing. If you follow me very much, you definitely know about my sister Laura from the blog Our Willy House. I've had her on this podcast several times. She is a mother of 4 and any day now 5, and we are best friends. We hang out 2 or 3 times a week. Even though we live an hour apart, we just make the effort. So she'll be coming out to my house Friday this week and staying all day long. We're going to do a play date, and then we're going to do our little Friendsgiving thing. And then I'll go out their way on Sunday and hang out with them. We just make an effort because our kids are best friends since we're best friends. And so we just make an effort to be around each other a lot. Now, when we were both younger moms, we would talk on the phone for hours a day. Now that's pretty much impossible because there's always kids around. So we just make an effort to get together and always, you know, keep that relationship going. We fought as kids, just like everybody else. I mean, I feel like all kids do that. But now we don't, and we're just good friends. So love having 3 sisters. Okay, here's a couple of blog related questions. What inspires your creativity for your blog posts, ideas, and recipes? And then another person asks, what strategy did you take in growing your followers? So, okay, first of all, as far as ideas for blog posts, before you start a blog, and even in the beginning of starting a blog, this part seems really intimidating, and you might think that you're going to run out of ideas. But I always find that one idea leads to more. So when it's Thanksgiving time, for example, and I make a cranberry recipe, soon I'm thinking, okay, what else is at Thanksgiving that needs a healthy version? And one idea always lends itself to another. Also with blogging, there's no limit to how small the thing that you're posting about can be. So for example, I did a blog post a couple of weeks ago on a fall window box. And I already had done the blog post on how we built the window box, but now each season I can fill it with something inspirational and then make a blog post on that. It's really pretty small. It's not a revolutionary idea, but I find that when I'm going about my daily life, I'm constantly seeing things that would work for the blog because I do blog at full time. And so I'm just looking for things. And when your eyes are open for what you could possibly share with your audience, it happens that you find things all the time. Okay. And then how I built my followers, I took a one thing at a time approach with my whole business. So when I first started my blog, I focused on getting blog content out for a while. And then I moved over to Instagram, and I really focused hard on Instagram for a while and built a ton of momentum. I did all of the hashtags, I collaborated, I posted every single day without fail. I kept my blog going, but I put my focus into Instagram. I did the same thing when I went to YouTube after that. I kept Instagram afloat. I didn't post every single day. I no longer looked for a lot of collaborations. I took them when people offered, but I didn't go out of my way to make Instagram grow. Since it already had the momentum, it's continued to grow ever since. And then I built YouTube to something that had major momentum. It still grows right now. I still post to it every single week, but I'm not actively seeking out collaborations and making sure by doing tons of keyword research that it grows. I'm just posting and the growth is happening because of the momentum I built. Same thing with Facebook. I've kept the blog and all of those things afloat while focusing one at a time. So I don't know if that really answers your question. I mean, if you're talking about Instagram, the way to grow on Instagram is consistency, collaborations with other Instagrammers, and then also really high quality content, not just any picture any day, but a strategy is important, and storytelling also. All right, someone says, I'm looking for part two of what I've learned in having six kids. That's a good idea. I'm gonna have to think about that. So I have the episode she's referring to is episode 17 of this podcast, where I shared 8 things I've learned from having 6 kids. I need to go back and listen to that. Because that was from February. I don't really remember exactly what I said. And then think of more in addition to that. I'm sure there's been more things that I've learned, but I don't remember what it was. But you can check that out. I need to go back and listen to myself. How do you have the energy to do everything you do and stay motivated? Mostly I'm driven by goals. So if I have a certain amount, a certain thing I want to achieve each day, and I'm really diligent about making a to-do list every day and a goals list that has more overarching goals and then a daily breakdown on how to do them, I'm pretty good at self-motivating whenever I have something that I want to accomplish. And that's how I have my business structured, to where I know what I need to accomplish every week. And then there's certain things I need to do every day, whether I feel like it or not, just to get my job done. So it's kind of like if you have something that, you know, like you, when you don't have to be motivated to go to your full-time job. You don't have to be motivated for that because you just have to do it because your boss is, you know, you're going to get fired if you don't. That's how I treat business things. Now, if you're asking how I get motivated every single day to get up, put on makeup, make sourdough bread, homeschool the kids, put on a nice outfit, go out in the garden, milk the goats, I don't do all things all days. So most of the time I leave my pajamas on, don't put on any makeup. I do have to milk the goats because that's one of those things you just have to do in homeschool. But so many other things I let go. So a lot of days we're just eating really simple things like meat and vegetables. There's not any sourdough bread. I definitely let things slide, and then, you know, I crash in front of the TV at bedtime. So with my business, I'm good about getting done the things I need to get done, but that doesn't mean that I'm always doing everything. How did you find your farmhouse? I actually shared a blog post on this. So if you go to farmhouseonboone.com, and I'm going to type this in to make sure I'm correct about this, and type in found a farmhouse or find a farmhouse. Yes. If you type in find a farmhouse, you'll find a post where I share with you exactly how we found our farmhouse. It has to do with going on realtor.com, and you could probably use anything like Zillow or anything else. And then I entered in my zip code and I expanded the search criteria because we'd looked for so many years, but we looked too close to where we were living at that time and we never found anything. Once I expanded my search, I also added more filters. I made the house 100 plus is what I wanted it to say or show. And then I expanded the acreage search to, I believe, 5 plus acres as well. And there were 2 contenders that came up right away. Luke and I drove all the way out here, and at the time he had no desire to move all the way to where we moved. And it's not that we live way out deep in the country. It's just a different town than he grew up in. At the time, he had quit his job. So we knew that we could expand. It's just that we just never imagined living anywhere than we than where we were. And now I love this area. We have the cutest little town. It has so many adorable little shops. It's just a neat town that we live near, but we had never thought about it before. So whenever we came out, we pulled in the driveway. We didn't have an appointment with a real estate agent. We just pulled in and looked around, and it was actually in the fall. So it was exactly 2 years ago in October. So 2 years ago, last month, we put the offer on this place. We came out. It was a super long drive. We had my mother-in-law watch the kids. And when we pulled in, I told Luke, you see, we have to have this. And he didn't catch the vision right away. Usually I'm better able to imagine something how it can be rather than how it is right now. I can picture the paint and the cleanup and the decor. And a lot of times I have to sell him on it. So we weren't sure that exact day, but then they were having an open house the following Sunday. So I told Luke, we have to go to that. And we ended up going with our real estate agent, putting an offer on it that day. And then it took a couple of months for our house to sell. And then we owned it in January 2019. So almost 2 years at this point. Okay, I'll take one more. And then I will definitely have to do a part three or just continue answering some of these questions at the end of each episode. All right, I'll answer a few of these because they're like really fast ones. Do you feel nutritionally depleted from having six kids? I really don't. I'm not a super in tune with my body type of person. I mean, I guess to an extent in some things I am, but I'm not one of those people that if I eat a cookie, I know that as soon as I eat that cookie, I'm going to feel bad. Certain people, you know, they know that if they eat this certain combination of foods, they always feel bad. I don't usually notice those kind of things, but I don't feel nutritionally depleted. I feel like I have lots of energy and I feel pretty good. Do you live in Boone, North Carolina? I don't. I named the blog off of the last house we lived in. It was on Boone Street, but we've since moved. Okay, last one. How to make the newborn phase as smooth and simple as possible. Hands down, my way, and I always give the disclaimer that I don't recommend that you do this just because I don't know you and your situation. For me, putting a baby in the wrap all day until they're 6 months and in my bed all night until they're 6 months makes newborns easy. I seriously love the newborn phase. I don't feel like it's something I have to get through. It's my favorite. And I can't say the same when I had my first child. So I do think it is because it's just doing it that way and just nursing on demand. It just all makes it easy. You don't have to think about schedules. You don't have to think about when they last slept or when they last ate. People call it the fourth trimester. I like to just put them in that little wrap, put them in my bed at night, and find it pretty simple. Now, 6 months, that's when they start to get too heavy. They start to get a little wriggly and want to lay down some. Things can get a little bit trickier, but at that point, I just start to get them on a nap schedule and transition over, even though there's sometimes a few awkward months, but I'm at the stage now where Daniel is 12 months. He takes two naps every single day in a pack and play in our room. And then at night, I lay him down around 7. He comes in my bed to nurse around midnight to 1, and then again around 4, and then he wakes up anywhere from 5:30 to 6, I would say. So pretty good. I cannot complain. I feel like as much as I quote unquote spoiled him whenever he was a newborn, I do that with all my babies and they always end up sleeping just fine later. So I'm a complete advocate of that. I think it does make the newborn phase easy. Other than my first, who I stressed about all the things, the schedule, feeding, everything. Other than that, I've loved the newborn phase and that's how I do it. All right, well, join me again next episode. I have some guests planned. So we're gonna start talking, I'm planning to start talking about Christmas and Christmas decor and Christmas traditions. I want to branch into some of that. So join me for episode 75 of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Also, if you have not yet gone and grabbed your free Thanksgiving ebook at bit.ly/thanksgivingfromscratch, all one word, make sure to do that. As always, thank you so much for listening to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast.